public input now, and we have a number of people. Most of the names are familiar, some are not. 3 minutes you get, the buzzer goes off. You can finish up your comments, but I'll call you up two at a time. Sean and Bob McCoy. You guys know the rules.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioners, good to see you again. Just to explicit, I am Sean Cantrell, Northwest Regional Director for Defenders of Wildlife. I also have the honor of serving on the Wolf Advisory Group. I say that for informational purposes. I'm speaking here on behalf of Defenders, not the WAG. And Donnie, you know, said he was leery of getting criticized, so I'll start off by giving him huge criticism. There's a huge paper that he absolutely missed. It's been on the street for hours. I don't know how he's bothered to miss it. But I do just want to note there is a paper that Defenders was worked on in conjunction with the Wildlife Services, several academic institutions, livestock producing, that looks at non-lethal tools and how they might work and not work in a very large landscape. This is based in Idaho in our work in the Wood River, which is part of Blaine, located in Blaine County. Excuse me. And it's about 1,000 square miles for the control area, or for the project area, and 1,000 square miles where the control, where you weren't using these tools, and comparing to see what happens when you use non-lethal tools versus when you are not using them. And this analysis, which literally is just out on the street and within the last 24 hours, found that over a 7-year period in these two different landscapes, livestock depredation losses to wolves were 3.5 times higher in the area where you weren't using non-lethals, where you were relying on lethal control as your only way of managing it, compared to the other areas. And again, these are areas where there were large numbers of livestock. This was sheep specifically, so again, recognizing cattle and sheep are different, but these were comparing sheep to sheep in these two different landscapes. And both of these had at least two wolf packs in each of the areas at the beginning in that first of the 7 years, and by the last of the 7 years, there were four wolf packs in these different areas. So again, you're talking about a significant area where you're having tens of thousands of sheep and numerous wolf packs, and that this is a peer-reviewed study, and that you're looking at results that say non-lethal really can make a difference. The end result was in the study area, you had zero wolves needing to be removed, which is very heartening to say. Again, it's not meaning that it wasn't a tool that was available, but it was not needed and not used in this area because the non-lethal tools, and this included fladry, livestock guardian dogs, range riders, turbo fladry, fox lights. There's probably others that I'm forgetting. So there was a wide range of tools that were used. But it is just another piece of information, and then we'll definitely make sure that the department staff has a chance to look at this. But just wanted to highlight that we do have opportunities, and as the WAG is looking at these things, to say, first and foremost, how can non-lethal be utilized so that if and when lethal is used, that it is a last resort, that we are finding ways to find the coexistence. And I think that is certainly what Defenders has found in this instance in working with Wildlife Services, who we've often been at odds with, and livestock producers. So I'm just wanted to flag that as an opportunity. Happy to share the link to the study for anybody who's interested.
Thank you, Sean.
Yeah.
You could.
Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. So when you say Defenders was involved in the study, or maybe I misheard that, but is there, I mean, what role did your organization play? I mean, I'm just kind of, you know, because a lot of times in science, you people get accused of you know, funding drug companies, come to mind, you know, drug companies funding research projects, and so, you know, there's always questions about that. So can you identify or just let me know how Defenders was involved in this?
Sure, happy to. Thank you, Commissioner. The study involved Defenders of Wildlife staff in the analysis, but also included Wildlife Services, which is a federal agency. It included Lava Lake Livestock, which is a sheep livestock producer company. It included a couple different universities. So we were one of the authors of this, but it also, and the payment of it, I mean, we put money in as far as our staff time, but the rest of the entities paid their own freight for doing the analysis. I totally understand, my organization might have been critical of some studies based on who was doing it or what the funding was, but part of this, our intent on this was to have an analysis that brought Wildlife Services and a producer and academic institutions all together to see if we could find it. And, you know, we thought this paper was going to be done a year ago. We thought it was going to be done 6 months ago. Because there's 13 different authors, it was a lot of herding cats and, you know, agreeing on language. But then it also did go through peer review after that.
Thank you. Lorna, come up. And, yeah, well, Bob.
Good afternoon. Bob McCoy, Sammamish, Washington. I was pleased to see one of the slides that Dr. Martorello put up this afternoon talked about replication as being part of the gold standard. 5-6 years ago, when I spoke to this commission, I handed out a reprint from Science Magazine that was called The Trophic Downgrading of Planet Earth. And in that article, they basically, this is from the abstract, large apex consumers were ubiquitous across the globe and had been for millions of years, and the loss of these animals may be humankind's most pervasive influence on nature. And this month, the Journal of Mammalogy has put out an issue with, I believe it's 6 major articles, and their headline is that carnivore conservation, we need to shift the paradigm from control to coexistence. And that's what we're looking at here. My background is in systems. I worry about our ecosystems. And a well-known ecologist, Daniel Jansen at the University of Pennsylvania, wrote, "What escapes the eye is a much more insidious kind of extinction, the extinction of ecological interactions." And what we're seeing is over the past decade, actually probably starting in the 40s with Aldo Leopold, is a consistent repeat of the body of knowledge and replication that in all known systems, in our marine systems, in our freshwater systems, in our terrestrial systems, as we remove top predators, we see a change in the interactions at lower levels. We see a trophic cascade. And my concern here is in wolf management and in cougar management, in bear management, that we keep in mind that there is more than just this population management. How many can we hang on to without extirpating the population? But the real question should be is how many do we need to have viable ecological processes that they fulfill their biological niches? So that's what I'd like to see, and the science has been replicated time and again, so there is a consistent story. And things such as Sean pointed out is we can coexist with these large carnivores, and it is uncomfortable for some people who are closer to them than some of the rest of us. We get cougars where I live. We get bobcats where I live. We get black bear where I live. But we don't have wolves yet, but I expect we will. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. And Amarok and Lorna.
Commissioners, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to address you. Whereas I agree that was an excellent presentation that the department just gave, I also would like to say, in my view, it didn't go far enough in some ways. I also heard a statement by, I think it was Commissioner Thornburn, that a lot of you were not sitting on the commission at the time that the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan was actually produced and issued. And I would just encourage you all to become familiar with this plan. In my view, as a scientist, this is one of the best scientific publications the department has ever released. This is based on excellent science. So, you know, all the recommendations in here are very sound. Other states have pointed to the Washington plan as an extremely well-done plan. So let us not forget there's a lot of good science that has been done. It's out here and should be relied on. And then the other science that has already been done I wanted to bring to your attention is this document. Western Wildlife Outreach, my organization, I forgot to mention, produced this under contract to the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It's entitled Living with Livestock and Wolves, Wolf Livestock Non-Lethal Conflict Avoidance, a Review of the Literature. So we looked at, I think, then the author is here, Jane Hutchinson. And Jane, we looked at 103 studies.
Research studies.
And summarized 54 of those in this document, and really good findings. And this is online. Both these are online, you know, on Fish and Wildlife's own website. Take a look at them. But I just kind of wanted to echo what Sean had said, that, you know, non-lethal conflict avoidance is a much easier road to go down than to have to try to solve a problem after it already exists through lethal controls or other means. So the whole goal should be to avoid the conflicts to the extent that we possibly can. All the measures, he talked about the range riding fladry, guardian dogs, fox lights, turbo fladry, all those things are good measures, and there's a number of others to be used too. So I kind of like the idea of normalizing wolves on the landscape, bearing in mind, of course, that they're still an endangered species. But we should bear in mind that they're not the only predator or carnivore out there that livestock producers are dealing with. They've been dealing with, you know, predators for a long time, and this really isn't so very much different than what they've been, you know, dealing with in the past. So, you know, we're talking about better husbandry, different measures of husbandry. So, good stuff already out there. Take a look at it.
Thanks, Lorna. Melinda Hirsch, please, and Emeril.
I'm Emeril Weiss, the Center for Biological Diversity. Thank you, Chair Smith, Commissioners, Director Unsworth. I hope you take this in the tongue-in-cheek manner it's intended. I think in all my time testifying in front of a commissioner or a legislator, this is the first time I've heard HIV compared to wolves and defenders lumped in with drug companies. So thank you for that moment. That was groundbreaking. So we definitely appreciate the time that the agency took to do this science review, and especially carrying on with it with all the travel and the weather conditions. Thank you for the early morning text, Donnie. I really appreciate that, too. However, they gave you a taste of the tip of the iceberg on all the science that's out there on wolves. For instance, there are at least 100 published peer-reviewed papers just on human attitudes about wolves, and at least 10 papers in the U.S. in the recent past on what to expect in human attitudes when you have different changes in management shifts or interventions. And we mentioned this to the department in some follow-up letters, and in November when we were here testifying before you, we wanted to hear about science on the effectiveness of lethal versus non-lethal, cost-effectiveness of lethal versus non-lethal, social tolerance, and what do the varying papers say about that, and also public lands versus private lands management. And so you just got a touch, a taste of it today. Just yesterday, 6 new papers were published in the Journal of Mammalogy that touch on really key aspects of changing the paradigm from controlling predators to coexistence. Now, the staff presented some key aspects on some of the papers, but some other key aspects of those papers were left out. For instance, the Brainerd paper recommended that if you're doing lethal control of wolves in a recovering population, you shouldn't do it when the pups are less than 6 months old. And we all know that that was completely ignored with the Profanity Pete Kill operation. So again, we don't want to cherry pick science. We also don't want to just cherry pick what we want out of the science and then not apply the other messages that those peer-reviewed studies are telling us. On social tolerance, I know of no scientific published peer-reviewed paper that says killing wolves increases social tolerance for wolves. And I've asked all the experts in this field. They know of no paper that says that. There was no discussion today on cost effectiveness. That's been a big deal with the three wolf kill operations in this state. So for the citizens that are concerned about that, that really needs to be discussed more thoroughly here, too, in the papers on that. As far as normalizing, you know, from my perspective and my 20 years in this field, for game managers, wildlife managers, that often means treating wolves like the other large huntable game mammals. And believe you me, that is not what the Washington residents that I represent want to see wolves normalized as. We revere wolves. We revere them for their incredibly important ecological role, and we don't want them normalized that way. And just to compare society-wise, in Europe, there's a paper that came out about 2 years ago showing that in Europe they have two times as many brown bears, two times as many wolves, and two times as many lynx as we have in an area that's half the size of the U.S. with twice the human population. So they are able to live with and tolerate and coexist with large, scary wildlife much better than we are. So I'm not sure what that says about how normal we are. I would just like to mention, you know, Commissioner Wecker, excuse me, former chair, yes, whoever you are, I know who you are. You mentioned the need to manage wolves to protect ungulates, and I couldn't agree with you more. In Wisconsin, the parts of the state that don't have wolves is where they have the most high incidence of chronic wasting disease. And the parts of the state where they have wolves is where they have the least amount of chronic wasting disease. Right here in Washington, we've got severe hoof rot in the elk, and we need wolves where those elk are in order to help those elk recover. So more wolves for healthier ecosystems and healthier ungulate populations. Thank you.
That's also true for the Upper Peninsula, Michigan.
Yes.
Yep.
That's okay. On bringing things you never thought, drug companies and all that, the commission got a letter on Friday in which something that we're dealing with on a statewide basis was, they brought up an analogy to how many people died in the Civil War. So that was the first time I referenced that, but in Bellingham, Pickett did live in Bellingham, so maybe there is a connection. So Stacy Takina, please, and Melinda.
Good afternoon. I'm Melinda Hirsch. You've seen me before. It's nice to see you again, commissioners, chairman. Thanks for the opportunity. I say what Amaroq said. She was I was going to talk about that, too. Well, I think is really important is this recent issue of the Journal of Mammalogy that came out yesterday, where it really covers all of the research that goes back since forever. And that institute is so well recognized and always on the cutting edge of science. And I brought along two copies because I wasn't sure whether other people were going to cover this. This is not the whole journal, but it does have, it's one of the key articles at the very beginning. And I think the bottom line is that we spend all of this time on lethal control, but could we have a panel on non-lethal control? Because the studies are showing that those are the ones that are effective, that you want to keep costs down. It costs a whole lot more to send the and the strafing guns out there than it does to work on lethal control. That's one of the keys in this. And I guess the other thing that I would say is that wolves are not just needing a place to eat and a place to stand to do it. Wolves need packs. The youngsters can't just go out and hunt. They have to be taught. All that education comes down through the aunts and the uncles and so forth, and as to where the rendezvous sites are. So that has to be kept in mind. You can't just leave three little ones there. They're not going to have the body of knowledge that those in a pack would have. And my final comment would be, although I could make quite a few, I did thank Mr. Martorello for his presentation. I thought it was excellent. But I think that there comes a time when the grown-ups have to decide some things, and there may be people who don't want to grow up, who don't want to recognize that the ecosystem is dependent on these major carnivores, and we have to protect them and preserve them. And we just have to bring them along and put that on the table, that is essential. And a lot of people don't like that, but the fact of the matter is that if the ecosystem doesn't survive, we're all going to be taken out. You know, not just, you know, the people that are in favor of it, but the ones that are anti-wolf. So be it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Carol Pearsall, please. And Stacia.
You pronounced it the last time, too.
I said if everybody was Smith, life would be easier. So.
Actually, I was happy to hear some of the stuff that was talked about today with science, and it made me feel really good. And a lot of what I was going to say has already been said. I feel like there's real progress being made. I kind of feel like Fish and Wildlife hasn't been using science for a long time, and it's been going, and the public is starting to get really upset about it, and it's becoming obvious. And when we see the other studies about ecosystems, one of the things that bothers me is sometimes when we look at things here like wolves, we're cordoning them off and kind of looking at something separate instead of as a part of the ecosystem. And that was mentioned when we talk about, well, how do we deal with ungulates or how do we deal with hunters? Well, we can't let a whole bunch of people go out and kill the strongest of a species and expect the ecosystem to be healthy, and nor can we kill off them and expect ungulates to be healthy. And we're realizing that everywhere. So I think we really need to take into consideration how management affects the ecosystem as a whole. And when it gets too late, it's too late. I mean, we see a lot of this happening in the Puget Sound with the whales that are all dying because we did the overfishing and the pollution. We're not taking care of the salmon. And I just don't want to see that happening with the bears and the wolves and some of the large predators that are coming back. And when I see the science coming out, I feel really good. And I really do feel like ranchers are going to be okay if we have the right non-lethals to protect them. And I think that we can have a win-win situation, mostly win-win. If we really do work on non-lethals, that's happening now, and we actually work to implement them. And as far as normalization goes, you know, the myths that are happening with wolves are really detrimental. And I think that we could put an effort towards normalizing them with, like, I don't know. I don't know how you guys see it, but like the Red Wolf Revival movie, and that was put all around, you know, the Midwest, and it changed ranchers' minds once they honestly saw how wolves were interacting. So I'd like to see that too, normalization, and just more non-lethals. And I think that when the public knows about the cost, the public was really upset about the cost of what happened, and they were upset that the breeding pair was killed and that possibly the pups. I mean, it was first written as humane, and it wasn't because, well, those pups probably aren't going to survive. And so I think the cost with all of that really was really upsetting. It was very upsetting to me and upsetting to the rest of the public, and we don't need to go through that again if we actually put effort into non-lethals. I guess that's about it.
Thank you, Stacia. And Paula. And Carol, you're up.
I can never remember what the proper form of address is, and I love it when people greet you correctly.
Eminence.
And hi.
Oh, no, wait, that's the other Washington.
Okay.
Washington Cathedral I was talking about, of course.
So at the risk of sounding like I'm speaking off the point, I decided last night that I would write something, because in the past when I've spoken in settings like this, I always departed from the scripts that I thought I would speak from and just spoke from my heart. So I'm going to go with what I wrote, and it's going to sound a little beside the questions that I've heard addressed today. But in the past, when I departed from what I thought I would say, it was because I was riding a tide of emotion, and I wanted to speak from my heart about the value of wolves as I saw them. And what I think is that you already have heard the from-the-heart pro-wolf stuff enough. You know what I would say if I were to say it. So, here we go. I think you know the pro-wolf heart script by now. The pro-wolf heart script by now. And if I've learned anything over the last year and a half, which is all the time I've personally involved myself in wolf issues, it's that much more goes into the questions of wolf management than the feelings of people concerned with the subject. But it still seems to me that human encroachment on wild lands is the problem in a nutshell, not the fact that wolves behave like wolves. I once saw someone in a Facebook discussion ask, where is all the sympathy for the elk and the deer slaughtered by wolves? And I'll tell you frankly, I feel none. I personally, it's not there. I don't have it. And I can tell you why. The design of nature is that wolves function as predators. It's what they do. It's not their policy. It's not a choice that they made. It's not a sport. The idea that a wolf would kill for sport when it is so hard to kill anyway, with just your mouth. I've heard the death of an elk at the hands, paws of wolves described as the death of 1,000 bites, because those animals are huge. I nearly drove into a herd of elk two nights ago when I was coming home from Portland on the road to Astoria. Those animals are gigantic. And if you are, what, this big? Anyway, I don't believe they kill for sport. I don't think they could. I think they kill for survival. So, what else could I possibly say that you haven't heard already? That, Saved by the Bell. Thank you.
You done well. Thank you. And Rebecca Canwright, please. You have very nice penmanship, Rebecca. And Paula.
Good afternoon, Your Eminence Smith. Members of the commission, thank you for the opportunity to address you.
You're already on the ADA committee.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. So a few quick comments. I represent Conservation Northwest. I also have the pleasure of serving on the state's wolf advisory group. So first of all, I just wanted to thank you for providing the opportunity for staff to do that science review. And I thought it was incredibly well done. And as they recognized and members of the audience have recognized, it was just a surface. But I think it was a good one. And I think it just reminds us all to be cognizant of the depth of research and the complexity of the issue. And I also just wanted to note how lovely it is to be amongst such scientifically literate citizens. I mean, the comments that we've heard so far, and it's lovely. I work with a lot of them, but just that there are so many people that are so aware of the science that's out there, and that's a good thing for our democracy and for the, you know, health of how we're going to jointly manage the species. So it just struck me listening to everybody. But the main point I wanted to make is that I think we all recognize how incredibly complex this management issue is, and that part of the nature of that complexity has to do with the social conflict around it. And, you know, some of the papers dealt with that a little bit. And as my colleague Amaruk pointed out, there's a lot more papers on that. But one of the things that I've had the great pleasure of diving into is all of the literature that undergirds the conflict transformation approach that the department is adopting, that the WAG is using, that Francine Madden has introduced a lot of us to. There is a really rich literature about what drives conflict in human societies, and there is a rich literature on the interaction between, you know, the human world and the natural world, and when we collide, and how it makes it so hard for us to solve these problems. And so it occurred to me, given that we're doing this big experiment here in Washington using conflict transformation trying to solve this issue, that we might want to figure out how to do our own study. You know, this technique has been applied in other places. I think they've seen very positive results. I've seen a few papers on it. I've done a literature review of people who have, you know, used that technique. And I think that because we're delving into this so deeply and trying so hard to understand everybody's perspective and come to, you know, really come to recognize each other's humanity and dignity. And that's the thing that makes science make sense, that makes it possible for us to use it. You can have the best techniques in the world on using preventatives, which, you know, my organization supports, and that's a value. I mean, it's a value that we bring. But if it's not accepted by the people whom you want to implement those techniques, you can't get very far. And so I think us understanding, you know, how we get there, how we achieve this coexistence, that is very, there's very obviously a deep value of our culture in this state, then we're not going to get as far as we want to go. So a suggestion of a study of what we're trying to do in this state. Thank you.
Thank you, Paula. Yes.
I just have to thank Paula for her dedication to this and her service, all the people that are on the WAG and their service to that. And the point you brought up is so important, because we tend to focus on the studies that talk about the effects on poaching, the effects on pup survival, or, you know, we get so focused in. And to just come up a notch, and, you know, for any of us that have been through any of that conflict transformation training, you're right on, because in the end, it's about still the people getting along and trying to figure out the resolution to conflict, and to a notch up and to look at those papers is really important. So I wanted to thank you, and you could probably just address the rest of us as the sons and daughters of His Eminence.
This is going to cost me. Take care of your hip, Paul, too. And don't fall off any more of those bar stools. Rebecca, you have the last word for the day.
Thank you very much. I'm a student at Evergreen State College, and I'm someone who grew up on an organic farm and has been raised with a lot of respect and admiration for, I guess, our fellow species, and just wanted to respectfully express my support for both salmon habitat restoration and wolf recovery, and strong support of the wolf recovery plan. And I just wanted to, I mean, there's many reasons, I guess, why one or I would support this wildlife conservation. And one is the, of course, intrinsic value of wildlife that wildlife holds for many of us. It's magnificence in itself, but also I wanted to stress that there are a lot of economic benefits that we don't consider when considering wolf protection. For example, eliminating wolves from our ecosystem through the use of lethal methods of management would cause an excess, most likely, in the ungulate population of the deer and the moose and the elk, and that would probably then cause them to overgraze the native vegetation, for example. All that to say, and then we would probably have to spend taxpayer money on restoring native vegetation. And so I just wanted to stress that wolves are they help us in habitat management and keeping our ecosystems healthy, and they do jobs that we would have a much harder job doing. And so I just wanted to stress their important role as balancers of the ecosystem. And then additionally, with salmon, of course, they are such a crucial food source for so many iconic species of our state, including the southern resident killer whales. You know, they rely so much, so heavily on salmon, and with dwindling salmon populations, of course, as you know, the orca populations are also dwindling, and the orcas support a, I believe, $75 to $80 million tourism industry in our state. And so I just wanted to stress that we need a strong salmon population for the orcas to continue and for our state to continue to receive funding from tourism. And as someone, and so lastly, to stress that these species have not only intrinsic value to many of us, they also have very clear and evident economic value, and just wanted to express a statement of support for their protection. So thank you.
Very well spoken. What's your major?
Oh, environmental activism.
Well, I'll give you an A for the day.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, wait, you don't have grades, do you?
Right. Right. True.
Then you get a blessing.
Thank you.
And tell
thank
your others, you know, most of the people that we see, nothing against the audience, but they look a lot like us, which is nice, I guess. But what we need are more people that look like you in these rooms. So you're the future of all this stuff.
Thank you.
So tell your other school buddies that you guys are just down the road. You can come up here anytime.
Exactly.
You know, even to watch, because this can be a very good educational experience.
It always is.
In terms of reality versus theory.
And
what we deal with is not theoretical.
Absolutely true. So, absolutely true.
So do that. Okay.
Yeah.
And you also have great penmanship, too.
Thank you.
And a lot of other people could benefit from, including myself.
You're very kind. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
That gets us close to Merlot. Boy, I guess, Bill, I must be giving you a heart attack today. No comment. That's a bad sign. Blame it on the weather. All right. So we will go into recess and reconvene at 8 tomorrow morning. Have a good evening.